So here's our part in the love triangle, is that God's going to love us and God's going to love other people. And there's really not much we can do about that. You can mess up really bad. He's going to love you. You can be really bad, really good, and he's not going to love you anymore. But God's love is pretty steady here. It's pretty steady over here. And then other people may or may not love us, and we might be able to do something to make them love us more, but probably not. Be as good as you can. And if they love you, good. If they don't, it's all got to be all right. And we can try to encourage them to love God, and they may or not, and that's between them and God. But really, the part that we can handle, the part we control, is us loving God, which is the greatest commandment. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind. Love your neighbor as yourself. And that's the part that we control. That's the part that we have options in. So we think about today about loving other people. We're going to take a journey into what I've entitled horse sense, which is basically, in one respect, the initial respect is just common sense. And some people, unfortunately, lack common sense. They lack horse sense. And you're one of them. From time to time, you have that momentary lapse of judgment. Something slips out of your mouth. You do something stupid. You do something crazy. But on a dare, possibly with some kind of chemicals involved, a guy decided he was going to see what it would be like. Am I up here? Yes, I am. That's not where I go. All right, hold on. Technology. Click. He was going to eat. Still not going? There we go. Some tiny little plastic horses. You see some mixed in here. Now, in today's market, I don't think you can even buy them. But remember back in the day, or you've ever seen them, the little tiny horses. It wasn't the big horses like I had up here. But he ate a handful of these things, and he ate quite a few of them, and on a dare, and decided that maybe a little bit later on when his stomach started hurting, he told the story to his wife. He got kind of in trouble, started feeling bad, and decided it was time to take that trip to the emergency room. So the doctor, who'd seen lots of crazy things in his life, decided that this was a weird one. And so he gave a look at him. They did a little scan thing on him. They checked him out. And the doc kind of joked around with the guy. The guy was in a pretty good mood. The wife, however, a little on edge. He's like, oh, it's no big deal. And the doc said something like, well, I think there was room for several more. I don't know why you stopped there. And the wife was not too pleased with that. And so he said, we can get this taken care of, and didn't tell him any details. And he walked out of the room, and the wife just followed him right behind. And so she got right up with him and said, doc, you know, and you're taking this kind of lightly. Tell me what's going on. Tell me about my husband's stomach, what's going to happen. Can you give me a report that's a little more serious? And the doc said, listen, we can get the horses out, but for now, your husband's stomach is in a stable condition. Yeah, it makes me cringe too. But if we exercise our spiritual horse sense, then we will have stable thinking. If we think like God thinks and we look at things the way that God thinks, then we're going to be able to have horse sense or common sense most of the time in our lives. Our passage for today, if you have your Bibles, you want to look there, is Matthew chapter 14. Matthew chapter 14, we'll begin reading at verse 6. And it's a story that starts off kind of ugly and ends up with a lot of ministry taking place. Matthew 14, verses 6 through 14 will be our reading today. And it goes this way. On Herod's birthday, the daughter of Herodias danced for the guests and pleased Herod so much that he promised with an oath to give her whatever she asked. Okay, a dancer for the king, he makes a promise. Verse 8, prompted by the dancer's mother, she said, give me here on a platter the head of John the Baptist, the forerunner of Jesus Christ, a powerful force for good in that time and a friend of Jesus. The king was distressed, but because of his oath, he made a promise, and because he had dinner guests and didn't want to embarrass himself, he ordered that her request be granted and had John beheaded in the prison. The head was brought in on a platter and given to the girl, who carried it to her mother, as gross as it possibly could be. John's disciples came and took the body and buried it, And then they went and they told Jesus. Jesus' response, when Jesus heard what had happened, he withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place. Hearing of this, the crowds followed him on foot from the town. So Jesus, in a saddened state, goes away to be by himself. But they follow him. And when Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd, and he had compassion on them, and he healed their sick. And so the first thing I want us to notice in this passage is that Jesus landed. He, wherever he was, he saw the people. Jesus saw the people. He wasn't so tied up in his own grief that he couldn't see what was going on. And I want to talk for a minute about what it's like to see people. I mean, sometimes you see things and sometimes you see things, right? Jesus saw the people. And in order to see people, you have to have a balanced posture. All right. When I go to Walmart, I do not have I'm working on my posture. I don't have a extremely good balanced prop posture. I go to Walmart and I start working on my posture, and all of a sudden I realized there was stuff up in the rafters because I never looked up there. But the problem with posture is you can get out of tune one way or the other. You can get tuned up a little bit too high, and all of a sudden you're not seeing the reality down here. And I think spiritually speaking, that happens to us sometimes. The first thing we teach new believers and ongoing believers is you need to get into the Word. You need to get into the things of God. And you need to put your head and think and be like God. And we can get our heads so much into that. And actually, you can't be there too much, but you have to keep the perspective that you don't spend all your time praising God and being with other believers. Now, we are commanded to be with other believers. We're supposed to especially do good to those who are of the household of faith. So we're supposed to be together and draw our strength together. But sometimes we get to looking up just at what's going on at church and our church friends. And it's all safe here. It all feels good. And we miss out on what's happened in front of us because our posture, our spiritual posture, is so heavenly inclined. But we aren't having the posture that God has that He sees. He sees what's going on. And then there's another danger. There's the danger that maybe when you were young and you fell down a lot, and I did, that somebody said, watch where you're going. And all of a sudden you change your posture from maybe up to down. Now I'm going to keep an eye on my feet and make sure. And every step I take, I do not fall. I do not trip. And my posture all of a sudden becomes down. And I don't see necessarily everything that's going on at this point. And maybe we spiritually we keep our eyes down because we're kind of keeping our nose to the grindstone and we do not want to offend people. And we want to follow this directive in 1 Peter. Let none of you suffer as murderers, which hopefully none here, thieves or evildoers, or as busybodies in other people's matters. So sometimes we just keep our nose clean and we don't want to say too much. And we just kind of keep our posture down here. Because we want to stay out of trouble. We don't want to get in people's space too much. And we stay over here. But the proper spiritual balance is to have both of those. Is to say, all right, I've got to be aware. I need to spend the bulk of my time with my Christian friends in the Word. I've got to be thinking like God at all times. I've got to not be meddling in people's business. But at the same time, I can't be so focused on one or the other that I miss the reality of what is going on. A proper balanced posture helps us to see well. And believe it or not, if you have a proper posture, you can still see what's going on with your feet. And you can still see what's going on above you and around you. And a good posture opens our eyes to the full picture of what's going on. And just as a physical posture, good physical posture relieves stress and puts you in a position to experience the world to its fullest, the same is true with our spiritual posture. And so we have to be aware and take an example from Jesus when he said, it says that Jesus saw the people. Are you guilty sometimes of just going out and it's just a crowd, it's just people, at the beach? You go to the beach now, what do you see? Wow. Numbers and things you see, maybe you don't need to see that much. But very possibly, maybe you need to do a little more up than down over there. But at the same time, we need to see people that God brings into our life that we might be able to help. So first thing that Jesus did was Jesus saw. And you notice the second thing in the passage is that Jesus saw and he had compassion on them. So compassion is a cerebral thing, but it's also an emotional thing. So Jesus felt. He saw enough that it moved his heart. And so many times I'm guilty of just walking through a situation and my heart doesn't get moved because I don't see. But if I see properly, then suddenly what can happen is I can start feeling. And I think, and this is just a postulate that I have, is that our compassion may be directly related to how close to an event or a situation that we are. In other words, if you just experienced it and somebody goes through it, you can go, oh, yeah, I feel that. And where if you're farther removed from that situation, you just go, oh, they'll be all right. They'll be fine. It's no big deal. So how many of you guys have been a Christian for 50 years or more? Anybody? Anybody fall into the 50-year club? Great. All right. And 40? Let me see, 40. 30 or more? That's I fall in that category. 20? All right. 10? 5? Less than 5. All right. So what we have in this congregation is pretty typical, right? We got people who've been doing it a long time. We got people that are just getting started. That's the family of God. And we're learning as we go along. And people have been doing it for 50 years. You know what? They're still learning. They're still growing. People that are doing it one, they're still learning. They're growing. We're all in this thing together. But the length of time that you do things probably has something to do with how much compassion you feel. And we have to try to remember very hard sometimes to get the compassion back. I want to take a little detour. I hope it'll make sense in the middle of this sermon, but I just want to kind of celebrate today. I think it's in a week or so. I'm celebrating my kiteboarding anniversary. Yeah, let's see. I know. It kind of brings a tear to your eye almost, but almost 4 years ago I started kiting, and I think this picture was taken by a photographer friend of mine about 2 years ago, and so there I am flying a 15-meter kite, which would stretch almost from speaker to speaker, almost. And you're hooked to it, and you're going, and it's an exciting time in learning. But you know, as it looks graceful, as you see people who do it well, and you're out on the water, it doesn't start that way. Let me show you some initial video. It does not start that way. Let me show you some initial video of, I think it was my second lesson almost 4 years ago, just a few seconds worth of it, and here it is. So you get up on the board, and you can't fly the kite, and you can't do the board. And then you get drug around for a good long time, drinking water. Your body's sore and beat up, and you're doing the very best you can, but that's pretty much it right there. Woo, I had a ride. I went home victorious. 3 months later, this video. So after being out there 2 or 3 days a week, as much as I possibly could when the wind was blowing, this is a video from a little bit later on, only three months later. At the three-month point, somebody came up to me and they're talking about being a kiteboarder and how hard it is. I'm relating to them. Man, I just drank the water. I just got pulled about a mile downwind and made a 45-minute walk in waist-deep water to the shore and another 10-minute walk back with all my gear on my shoulders. And so at that point, at the three-month point, I'm feeling it. And we're talking kiteboarding, and I can relate. But, you know, you hit the two-year point. Is it still going? I thought it was a shorter video than that. Anyway, at the three-month point, you remember the one-year point. It's like, oh, yeah, that's pretty tough. Time on the water, you'll be fine. And pretty soon you're just going, just keep getting out there, you'll be fine. And you just kind of like, oh, it's all right. Everybody's got to do it. It's a hard life. Nah, nah, nah. You don't feel too much for them. But that's how it is with compassion. Sometimes we forget what it's like to be the puppy in love, because puppy love is always real to the puppy. And the problem they're going through way back from you, we have to reengage and see and feel. And if we don't feel for people's situations and feel for people's plights, then we miss out on opportunities to minister. See where I am here. Because we are merely aliens and strangers, as one version puts it, here on earth. We're passing through. And I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, aliens and strangers, to abstain from sinful desire which wages war against your soul, and then live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they can see your good deeds and they can glorify God. And so our lives need to be lives of compassion that reach into other people's lives and bring them along. You know, we live in an area that has a lot of service industry. And sometimes we don't see the service industry. We see, and they're, by the way, they are servers, they're not servants. And sometimes we get in the bad way of maybe just not seeing the people that we're around, and the impression we leave may not be so well. I was talking to the Waddell girls who were here last week for Pastor Bill's 15-year anniversary as pastor here. And all three of their children are now servers up north there where they live. And I said, tell me some server stories. Tell me some stories about Christians particularly, what's going on out there. And which one was I going to tell here? Let me find it. Give me a second. Mm-mm-mm. There it is. There was one of the girls, I think it was Hannah, said there was a church group that came in one night, and they were younger, so we'll give them a break. But they were wearing their church T-shirts, and it was kind of a slow night, and they let a couple of servers go, and so about 5 minutes before they closed, 25 of students came in, and they were understaffed, and they came in, and what that group saw was apparently something different than the staff saw. So what they saw was, when it was all said and done, they said the people were not very happy. They didn't get very good service. The food didn't get out very fast. They stayed a pretty long time, and then they left unhappy, and they didn't tip very well. So that was kind of the story as it went. And she told it with much more enthusiasm. But what they saw as people going into the restaurant was different than what the people in the restaurant saw. What the people in the restaurant saw was, man, we got all our floors are mopped, all our sections are clean, the cooks are standing at the place ready to clock out, and 5 minutes before we bring in a group of 25. Those things happen. You're traveling, something, and it's not that the group did a bad thing, but the attitude that we go in sometimes really hurts and tarnishes the name of the Lord. And so these people had to do all their side work twice, and that's what other people see. But sometimes we don't even see those kind of things. And Hannah was very, very animated as she shared that story. I got another story from Abby in just a minute. But as we're aliens and strangers here, what happens is we have to learn to see and feel other people's positions in life. And so that brings us to the title. Again, we're back to the idea of horse sense. Horse sense. That my first experience with horses was with these two horses, and they will oftentimes come up on, when we let them in the yard, they come up on the back porch. They're our friends. They're giant pets now. There's not a lot more to it than that. But my first experience was with Cherokee, the wild Mustang. We had just got him. We just got the fence lined up in our yard. So we took, my daughter says, I'm going to work with the bigger horse, the Arabian horse, over here in this side of the pasture. And I want you to take the smaller horse over on this side of the pasture. Here's a rope, and here's a halter, and walk over there. And I want you to keep this one busy while I do stuff over here. I don't know anything about horses, so okay. I'm helping my daughter out. We walk over there. I had some carrots, feeding them along, you know. The horse is happy. Walk all the way to the corner of our property. The carrots run out. Starts to get real. You start understanding what horsepower, why they rate things in horsepower. Okay, you understand. So all of a sudden, they're way over there on our other edge of our 5 acres, and I start holding on and dancing with this thing and pulling, and she's starting to give me the eye and starting to move her rear toward me, and legs are starting to go up, and teeth are starting to come out, and I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm working all I can. I'm trying to salvage the situation, and finally I just have to let go because horses have a lot of power, and I don't know anything about horses. And it was kind of a scary situation, but I learned a little bit about horses over the next few years. And I learned to get into their world just a little bit. And we need to do the same thing. Because as this passage says, and you've heard this before, we're in this world, but we're not of it. And when we deal with the public, when we deal with people in all different walks of life, what happens is we're aliens and strangers. We're not a part of this world, and it's very different. And we need to learn some of the rules of the world so that we can participate with them on their terms to start with, in order to bring them in to the ways of the Lord. And so how many of you guys have worked and dealt with horses before? Okay. So, wow, a good number of horse people in here. So I'm going to put up some rules, horse rules that you know not of. Now, all you horse people may already know these, and it's fine. But for me, being an ignorant person, I had no idea how to relate to a horse. But as my story earlier in the children's sermon, I started connecting the dots, and my daughter helped me. The first rule of horses is don't move your feet. Just a weird rule. I remember when my daughter told me, it's like, what? Well, they don't talk. But if you walk up to a horse and you start shuffling your feet, immediately that horse says, stupid human. They do. It's just, they don't respect you. And the whole rule, the whole game, the whole being of horses is whoever stands firm is the strong one. And so you walk up to a horse and he moves his head towards you a little bit. You shuffle your feet a little bit. That horse just thinks you're the idiot. It does. And then it maybe start biting at you just because it's fun to watch you move. It's like, I'm winning. The horse is winning the game. And they just keep you moving all over the place. Then they turn their rear towards you and you take off. And they're going like, I win. And so the rule was go out there and don't move your feet. And so I've been moving my feet a long time. I learned this rule. So I walk up to the horses. And it's like, so she throws her head at me. What do you do? Well, you start doing this. That's almost as bad as moving your feet because they can make you move. And then once you get good, they watch your facial expression. And if they can make you mad, they win. Just like little kids. They watch mom and dad, right? If they do something that makes mom and dad, they know how to push your buttons. Horses know how to do that. No words spoken. But when you stand firm, they go, huh. And if they make you move, you don't get mad and you don't smack them and stuff. You just go, all right, you won that round. And that's how they play. And they go, oh, I got someone willing to play. 2 out of 3. 3 out of 5. And the horse rule is don't move your feet. Places you go, there are rules. And maybe you don't know. If you go to the bowling alley, you've been a bowler for a long time, you know there's some bowling etiquette, right? And I go bowling, and I don't go often, but there are many people that don't know the bowling etiquette. And I don't know anything about fishing in a boat, but I know there's got to be some do's and don'ts when you're fishing in a boat. I'm not that guy, right? And you get newbies coming in, and everybody shakes their head and go, oh, I can't believe he's doing that. You don't do that. And unless we become aware or we ask questions, we'll break the world's rules, and the world will say, stupid human. Stupid Christian. Doesn't know any better. That's the only world they know. And if we're going to crack into it, we have got to understand their rules. The second rule, and there's more, but the second rule is the approach and retreat rule. So don't move your feet. Approach and retreat. When you deal with the horse for the first time, or even now as we have a good relationship with the horses, you can walk up and there's a bubble. There's a bubble zone where the horse gets uncomfortable. You know, it's kind of like some people like, hey, how you doing? And the very first time you meet them, they're like 4 inches from your face. Hey, it's like, I'm real comfortable with my wife being 4 inches from my face, but I don't really want anybody else this close. Well, horses have a bubble, and if you don't see and you don't feel, you miss it. You just walk right up to a horse, you grab him by the neck, you start hugging on him, you start to pet him, which will go badly if you try that. Unless they're drugged. But you have to approach retreat. You find the bubble. You walk up to a certain space between you and the horse. And what happens is this. Is that horse, his ears twitch a little bit. And the back muscles on his back start to tense. And you know you've reached that bubble. And it might be 6 feet from you. And it might be half an acre. But as soon as you do, if you want to speak horse language and you want to relate to that horse, you approach and you go, I see your pain. and you retreat just a little bit. Turn your eyes. They don't like you staring at them. They don't like your body face toward them, so you give them a little relief. If you look out of the corner of your eye, what you'll see is that horse, his back will relax. His head will go down. He'll lick his lips and say, "Thank God that person's leaving me alone." And then it's not like you can't go back, can't try again. So then you turn to the horse, and the horse goes, "All right, I'm okay with you being 30 feet. So you start walking in a little further. Start tensing up. You go, "Okay, I'm going to give that horse some relief." You back away. Horse bows his head, licks his lips. You do it again until that horse says, "This person understands me," and they let you walk in to where they are. Now, it doesn't mean you can all of a sudden just jump on them and ride them or start petting them or hugging them around the neck. It's a process. But what happens in our relationships is like that. Sometimes the gospel, we just rush in and we just like get right up into people's faces. And they're like, "You don't know any rules of how we even operate in our life. And you just want to come in and do this." And we overwhelm people sometimes with our spirituality, with the gospel. And I'm not saying don't share the gospel. And I'm not saying, you know, I'm one to put the word out there. But we have to put it out there and then retreat and see. And we have to do it with eyes that are wide open, with good posture. And we have to do it with compassion. And sometimes we can get very legalistic about the way we do this. So the bubble is real to people. The bubble is real to you. I hope you relate to that, right? Like there's a brand new people. I'm not sure about anybody when they're brand new. It takes me a little bit, okay? I give them the benefit of the doubt. You work in, you build a relationship. And so we're supposed to be all things to all people. In 1 Corinthians, "Though I'm free," Paul says, "I belong to no one. I've made myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible." How do you become a slave to the people that you're serving? You got to find out what their rules are, how they operate, how they think. And when you can see that, and when you can start feeling where they are, then I'm pretty sure that when you get to the third part, you're not going to have any trouble figuring out what to do. Jesus landed. He saw the large crowd. He had compassion on them. And then he healed their sick. Now, we might be in the business of spiritual healing. Probably nobody in here is a physical healer where you just walk up and touch people and their cancer goes away and stuff like that. I have never seen any of it. But New Testament times, Jesus did it. The apostles did it. But what we do know is that Jesus acted. So he saw clearly, he felt, and then Jesus acted. When we feel their plight, we'll know the right thing to do. And sometimes the right thing to do is to give them a Bible verse. Holy Spirit's got to lead you. Sometimes the right thing to do is to sit down right next to them and not say a blessed word. You know, and no advice is better than bad advice. So if you don't have real sure godly advice, the best thing you can do is to be there. And if you're there today and you sit with them and they know you'll be back tomorrow, you'll have opportunity to speak the truth into their lives. One of our members, Paul Cunningham, has a phrase that he uses: "That's not my mistake to make." And Paul told me that phrase came from dealing with his children, who would call up from time to time and ask for advice. And his advice oftentimes was, "That's not my mistake to make." And, you know, and sometimes in the world, we've been far enough along in the kiteboard journey, we've been far enough along in the Christian journey, that we can say, "That's a real dumb idea." And we should say that, but we need to say it with graciousness. And sometimes the best thing you can do is hold somebody's beverage while they do something really stupid. I'm not saying don't try to stop them, don't give them good advice, but you know how people are. They're bullheaded and they get it in their mind they're going to do it. You can say, "I wouldn't do that," and you can give them all, you can try intervention, you can do what you can. But sometimes the best friend you could do is hold their beverage, keep the phone in the other hand so you can call 911 and help them pick up the pieces. Now, I'm not talking about physically. If they're going to hurt themselves, you should step in. But emotionally, that happens, right? It's like you scratch your head. They're going to do dumb things. You do dumb things. But what do we do after the dumb things? We pick up the pieces and we minister. We got to see, we got to feel, and we have to act. One last little note on the situation is that this whole passage comes right on the heels of Jesus getting some really bad, horrible news. And so even in the midst of his own personal pain, his own personal difficulty, the challenge is for you and me to do the same thing. We still have to see. We still have to feel and love people. And we still have to do the ministry that God lays before us. Right? There's another story that I skipped one of them. We'll go to the final story. There was one story that that Abby told me, and actually both girls chimed in. They said, you know, sometimes when there are servers, you just have bad days. You have bad tips. You have mean people. You have demanding people. You have a lousy section, which means you don't make much money. People stay too long, and all these bad things happen. But they said, you get that one good table. Those people that come in, and they're fun. And they're friendly. And they're patient, and they're kind. Wait, wait. Isn't that the scripture we read? They embody love, God's love. And they said that there's that one table can turn your whole night. It doesn't make up for the money you lost. It doesn't make up for... But in your spirit, that one table can be the boost for the day that pulls you out of the pit. That's us. That's supposed to be us. Not just at a restaurant, but everywhere we go. The people who see, the people who feel, people who care, people who love, and people who treat people with kindness. Would you pray with me? Father God, we thank you for your word. It's alive. It's real. You promised that. And we know that you've got a plan. And God, today you've got a plan. You speak to each heart in their own separate ways. God, I have no way of knowing how you're doing and how you're doing that and exactly what you're doing. But I do know that you are at work. So God, I pray that each one will respond properly and say yes to you during this time of invitation. Lord, that your name might be glorified. And Lord, that we might be the people we need to be. And I pray it in that amazing name of Jesus. Amen.